Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. GM closed its truck plant in Moraine, Ohio, putting roughly 2,500 people out of jobs 2 days before Christmas 2008. Julia Reichert and Steve Bognar made a documentary about the last days of the plant, described by one worker as a gentle dragon dying. Julia is with us today, along with Paul Popeye Hurst, one of the workers who lost his job with the plant closing. Julia, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
And also, Popeye, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to just kick off with a cut from the film. It's with Kathy. She's a final line worker, and she's reacting to the news that the plant is closing. Let's hear.
Hey. I'm 47 years old. I've got three kids that are grown, and I've got six grandchildren, and I would probably just... I don't know. I couldn't see myself going back to school. You know, not after doing this. This has been my life. You know, I'm a factory worker. I'm proud of it.
You know, what you don't see from the hearing is the tears in the eyes, and that it's kind of dewy sometimes. It's not full-blown tears. But what struck me about that, and I, for one thing, really liked Kathy throughout the film, was the theme of pride.
Yes.
As workers, can you talk about what kind of impression you got as far as that was concerned, Julia?
Yeah, maybe I'll start with that because I was the newcomer. I mean, Popeye knows all about it, and I'm so glad, Popeye, that you're on this call with me today.
Me too.
That was the first time we actually met Kathy and a few other of the women who worked there, and the depth of emotion about the closing of the plant came as a real surprise to us, and we didn't even know what it was coming from at first. And we kind of gradually came to realize that it was partly because of basically the loss of family, the mm-hmm. loss of deep friendships over many, many years, and also the loss of a sense of who you are. You know, like she says, I'm a factory worker. This has been my life. I'm proud of it. Just when she said, I'm proud of it, and gave us that look, I mean, mm-hmm. folks who come to the Wexner Center tomorrow night, you can really see the look that she gives us at that moment. That came as a surprise to us. I mean, I think we had, like everybody, you know, we listen to the news and we hear stories of overpaid, you know, union auto workers who don't really do a good job, the cars are no good. They don't care about their work, you know, all this stuff that you hear pretty regularly, actually. So, and we found all that to be very untrue when we got up close.
A lot of pride in work, eh, Popeye? I mean, that was pretty consistent throughout.
Well, we were building a product for the public. And, you know, if you want to keep your sales up and you want to keep your jobs, you have to build a quality product. And that was one thing that almost every person, to a man or woman, took pride in was the quality of the job they did.
And I also got the sense about, a much better sense than I ever have before, about how difficult the job is or was, because you always hear the idea of a factory worker sort of very in a very dismissive way, like, well, anybody can do it, but I don't think I could do it now. Popeye?
Well, anybody can do it. They just can't do it for very long.
Right.
The toll on people's bodies, that was, I guess, another – there were so many things we learned making this movie. But the toll on people's bodies is very astounding. You know, you don't talk to a GM worker or, I guess, any auto worker who's worked more than, say, 10 years who hasn't had either surgeries or, you know, really major body issues, injuries, repetitive stress. And the long-term workers are really kind of a mess. I mean, in a way, that's the trade-off is you kind of give your body to the company, and you expect back you're going to get the security, and you're going to get a good salary, and you're going to get security in your older years, you know, health care and retirement and so forth. That was kind of the trade-off. Wouldn't you say, Popeye, that was the expectation?
Well, yeah, it was. And 'cause to be honest with you, the work was so hard, and it did take such a toll on their body that the reason most people worked there was for the benefits. It wasn't the money. It was the benefits, because health care mm-hmm. costs are skyrocketing. And, you know, that was part of the deal.
If you're just joining the program, my guests are Julia Reichert, filmmaker, producer, and director of the...
The The Last Truck.
The Last Truck. It's a documentary about the last days of the plant. I guess I didn't mention that in my opening. I apologize. I'm just kind of looking at it now. And also, Popeye Hearst, he's one of the workers who lost his job with the plant back 2 days before Christmas.
And that was a General Motors plant, a huge plant that once employed 5,000 people in our town of Dayton, Ohio.
I want to talk about that, the size of the plant, in a second. But first, as long as we're talking about the strenuous nature of the work, I wanted to go to another cut. It's there are two female auto workers describing their jobs and how hard it was when they first began working in the plant.
It's very physical. When you're pulling a sheet of tin, it's 6 foot or 8 foot by 4 feet, usually. And then you got to slide it down on a table. It'll cut the crap out of you.
I went home with my fingers could not move, and I thought, I cannot do this. And my dad said, you go in there and do not say you can't do anything, and you just do it.
Both of the women, well, I was kind of, I guess, surprised, too, by how many women you interviewed.
Oh, well, when Steve and I first started meeting people there, we the stereotypes, we just assumed it was all a bunch of big, burly guys, kind of like Popeye, right? Big guy with a long beard, maybe wearing a Harley shirt. It turns out 40% of the people working there are women. And there's a high percentage, I don't know what it is, but there's a lot of African-American people, both men and women, working there. And there are people in their 30s on up to people, getting ready to retire, right? I mean, don't you think, Popeye, really was a very broad bit of the population?
We had somebody from every walk of life. We had crooks, we had thieves, we had some of the best people in the world, and it was a small city within itself.
It was like a closed society in a way. People really protected each other, and there were a surprising number of college grads, people with degrees. It wasn't just the people who kind of made it through high school barely and couldn't do anything else.
Right. No, I was going to ask about that because not just necessarily degreed people, but the intellect was, I guess you didn't check their IQ before you asked to interview them, and the intellect was stimulating. I mean, it was interesting.
Well, you had to have a certain degree of intelligence, to be honest with you, to do the job. I mean, it's a lot more complicated than just putting screws in a hole, your average dummy couldn't do it. Most of the people in there were actually very intelligent people.
Yeah, and then, of course, about, 10%, Popeye, were skilled trades.
Yes, that's what I was.
And you were a tool maker, but there were other skilled trades, like there were, you tell us, what are some of the other skills?
Yeah, tell us about it.
Well, we had electricians, we had pipe fitters, we had millwrights. We had weimers,
What's that?
Weimer, yeah, tell me what a weimer is.
Well, weimer took care of it's welding, electrical, maintenance, repair.
Oh.
They were basically in the body shop, and it's a trade that's exclusive to assembly plants because they took care of those bodies come in hundreds of different pieces, and they all have to be welded together. And the weimers took care of the welding process in the plant, the spot welding process.
Julia, how did you get into the plant to do part of the film? A lot of it was done outside the plant, but some of it was done in.
Well, that's a bit of a story. If people, the film is going to show tomorrow at the Wexner Center, and it's funny because here we are hearing audio clips of a film, but it's actually very visual. And to me, one of the most visual parts of it is the material that was filmed inside the plant. And of course, if anyone's ever heard of Michael Moore and seen the film Roger and Me, the GM doesn't really like filmmakers very
much.
Well,
I wondered
anymore.
About that. I thought of that.
Yeah, and we tried hard. Steve and I wrote and wrote and called and, locally Detroit, tried everything to get permission. And, we let them know this is not going to be a slam on GM. This is really about the end of an era of our community, Dayton, Ohio, with the closing of this huge plant. And, by the way, the plant is bigger than the Pentagon. I mean, it's really big. No luck. There was a media day close to the end, and we got in for maybe 20, 25 minutes, and we did get some shots. But after that, what we began to realize as we were getting to know people more and more, people like Popeye, Kate, Kathy, who you just heard from, is that the film would so benefit the story you know, the audience is understanding. If we could just shoot what happens on that last day or two as people were really watching the last vehicle go down the line, which, by the way, takes 3 days. So long story short, we tried doing it on a cell phone, which one of the workers suggested. That didn't work. So we ended up getting these little cameras called flips, HD flips. They're little, like, $200 cameras. And we gave one to one of them, and he tried it out. That night we downloaded it in a bar, one of the local bars. And the rest is history, right, Popeye? Then Popeye got one, and Kate got one.
And Kim, Clyde.
And Kim was the first person, yeah.
The quality was good. I didn't notice that much difference. I noticed a slight difference, but I thought it might just been the, you know, interior.
Yeah, and did atmosphere. You? How did you feel about doing all that shooting?
Well, it was kind of neat, actually. And they give us a few little pointers on how to frame shots and stuff, but I've said this before, and I believe it today, the only reason it turned out as good as it did is because I really didn't know what I was doing.
Sounds like me.
So they shot all, you know, we just said, you know, we gave them a few things. We'd be sure to get this and that. Like Popeye shot the actual last sticker going on the last vehicle.
Yeah.
And he was there, and you hear his voice in the background talking to his friend Lou, who puts on the last sticker. You know, there were a few things we asked people to get. But, you know, really, they just people shot what they felt was important. And what you see is a lot of people hugging, waving goodbye, a lot of, like, little portraits. And then the actual moment of the last truck, which we had no idea. I don't know if you did, Popeye, that was going to be such a big moment. We didn't know it till we saw the footage either.
Did you think that was going to happen? Kind of where they're gathering around the car at the end and signing their names and taking pictures.
I never asked you that, Popeye. Did you know that was going to happen?
No, that was just something that, I mean, it just materialized. I don't think anybody realized it was going to happen. You know, I don't think anybody actually, how can I say this? It was a very monumentous, or that word, something that nobody planned. It just happened, and it's everybody saying goodbye, and it kind of drove home the point that it was closing and it was the last truck. So,
and you were losing this whole, as everybody refers to it as the Marine Assembly family.
Mm-hmm.
You just heard that word over and over again. Again, that was another one of the real surprises.
Yeah, just look at the looks on the people's faces
right.
in that last final shot where they're all standing around the truck. You can just tell by the looks on their faces that they're stunned. They just can't believe it.
Right.
They are stunned. That's a really good word, yeah.
It's a stunning movie. We're talking about The Last Truck. It's a documentary by Julia Reichert and Stephen Bognar. It was nominated for an Academy Award last year, and it is going to air or show tomorrow night. No, tonight?
Tomorrow
night. It's Wednesday.
Wednesday
actually,
night,
yeah.
Right. I took yesterday off, so I'm completely confused. It's
going to
show Wednesday at the Wexner Center. We'll have a link for more information on our website at WOSU.org/allside. You can go there for more information or go to the Wexner Center for more information.
Yeah, and there'll be actually, I think at least four of the guys and women from the plant will be there, maybe more than four, to take questions. And we're hoping some assembly line workers from Columbus and or other union people or working class folks who do manufacturing will come out. Even if you've never been to the Wexner Center, it doesn't matter. It's a cool place.
It's a very cool place. We have to take a short break right now. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
Lifestyle Family Fitness CEO Jeff Dyer hopes his Columbus gyms will be packed with teenagers.
Having a chance to exercise in an adult environment gives them a whole different perspective about the way fitness can be fun and rewarding at the same time.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
And you're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. 74 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1020 this morning. Sunshine today and a high of 85. Clear skies tonight and a low of 63. More sunshine tomorrow and a high of 85. Remember, you can listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/AllSides. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the documentary, The Last Truck. It was nominated for an Academy Award last year. It is about the closing of GM's truck plant in Moraine, Ohio. And joining us today, filmmaker Julia Reichert, and also Popeye Hurst. He is one of the workers who lost his job in the plant closing. Popeye, you said it was the end of the good life. What do you mean by that?
Well, working at General Motors was definitely upper middle class. I mean, it was good money. It was good benefits. It was sometimes rewarding work, sometimes not. But it afforded me the opportunity to buy a nice house. My wife and I raised three grandkids. Two of them are graduating finally this year, the last two that we raised. And it just made it possible for me to do that, you know, buy a new truck, buy a Harley Davidson, you know, go on vacations. Yeah, it was the good life. I wasn't rich, but I sure was far from poor, you know what I mean? And that's all gone.
One of the women that you interviewed in the movie, Julia, made the point that she came from nothing. Her
right.
family had nothing. She came from nothing. I can't remember. She came from West Virginia or something like
Tennessee.
Yeah. And that she ended up, you know, raising her kids, taking them place. Was that a common theme?
Yes, it really was. That's Darlene. She's also the person who gets very angry about the comment that
yes.
the workers earn $78 an hour. But Darlene, you know, came from rural Tennessee with nothing, as she said, moved into East Dayton, which is a largely poor white, you know, a lot of Appalachian people, not all by mm-hmm. any means, but a lot. And the thing she's proud about and what a lot of people talk about is how they were able to provide their kids. Look, I mean, Popeye talked about it just now, with more than they had. In other words, they could take vacations. Wow. You know, they could actually provide a stable home with food on the table every night and maybe even buy a house and, you know, have choices. And, you know, it's interesting, as we've been showing the film around, I asked people, you know, how many of your parents and grandparents worked at GM, and you get a lot of hands going up, or aunts and uncles, and how many of them had a house and had stability and you went on vacations and they retired happily, and they say, yeah, how many of you are going to do that? In other words, people in their 40s and 50s now, and almost no one will raise their hand. You know, so it's really, when Popeye says the end of the good life, I think it's really kind of the end of the American dream for the blue-collar middle class. The idea that you can have a shot at having a comfortable, secure life, your kids can go to college if they want, you can have a roof over your head that you can count on. Do you know what I mean? Have those kinds mm-hmm. of choices that America was supposed to provide for its hardworking people.
Again, though, there's that dichotomy that, well, why should they make so much money? What do they do? And we do have that cut from the movie with Darlene. She's a metal inspector, and she's reacting to speculation that GM workers are overpaid.
I do not make $75 an hour. I probably make a third of that, and I would challenge anybody to go inside that plant and work on that assembly line 9.5 to 10 hours a day and say that I don't deserve that $25 an hour. Okay, there's nothing wrong with being able to provide a good income and benefits for your family.
Well, why do you think, Popeye, that Americans often have the attitude that factory workers and automobile workers in particular are overpaid, and that it's your fault that the industry is caved in?
The media.
Oh.
I'm serious. And people, be honest with you, and I'm probably going to get hate mail for this, but Americans are lazy people. They'd rather have their opinions formed for them than to make them on their own. They're just too lazy. They'll watch Fox television and believe what that idiot says, and they don't investigate it. And unions have always had a bad rep even from the beginning. But if it wasn't for unions, which, don't get me wrong, there's bad points to them too, but if it wasn't for unions, we'd still have child labor. We'd pay guess that's about it.
I mean, I think, you know, there's basically petty jealousy and stuff like that. But
they would have traded places with us in a New York second. Most of the people that did the most whining and crying about us being overpaid would have traded places in a second. I guarantee you they wouldn't have lasted 8 hours.
Yeah, I think somebody's got to get paid. There's got to be some top of the wage scale. And it is true that unionized workers are often up there, but that's the unions fight for not just union people, but how did we get the weekend?
The whole community.
The whole community benefits, and everyone's like safety and health standards are held to a higher measure because of the efforts of unions. And as Popeye says, they're not perfect.
The point's made in the movie, and I can't remember if somebody said it or if it was one of the overlays that a factory like the GM plant in Moraine actually supports closer to 10,000 jobs in the community.
Yeah. They say that they often say that with auto plants that there's 6 to 7, you know, additional people per person who works there who also is employed with related businesses. They're often not union. Some are.
Well, the unemployment rate in Dayton, Ohio is 10.9%. A couple of weeks ago, it was 12.9%. But the reason it's going down is because people are losing their unemployment benefits, so therefore they come off the records. But the jobs in Dayton, Ohio, there's virtually none of. There's nothing out there.
Yeah.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm speaking with Julia Reichert, and filmmaker, and Popeye Hearst. He's a former GM auto worker and one of the subjects of the film The Last Truck. Julia and her partner, Stephen Bognar, were nominated for an Academy Award for the film, and it is going to be shown tomorrow night at the Wexner Center. Go to wosu.org/allsides for more information about that.
Yeah, and we were actually, his name is Bognar, by the way.
Oh, sorry
just
about that.
Just for the record, it's okay. We were nominated this year, and so, of course, four auto workers plus Steve and I and some of the people who worked on the film were out there in Los Angeles and Hollywood just, a month and a half ago, Popeye? When was that?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah.
So you went out there, Popeye?
Yeah, I did. I saw the back of a lot of really famous people there.
there was a scene in there that caught my attention specifically. It was the scene with the toolboxes.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, Popeye. What was that all about?
Well, it was like a parting gift. You know what I mean? They decided, all the repairmen and all the skilled tradesmen, they decided out of the goodness of their hearts that they would let us take our toolboxes. But what a lot of people don't realize is they made everybody dump their tools out. So all those toolboxes were empty. There wasn't a tool one in any of those boxes.
Yeah, and I understand they scrapped all those tools.
Well, they sold them to like Mendelssohn's and places like that for scrap prices. Or you could go in and bid $20 at the auction and buy a ton of them.
Mm-hmm. Was it a big deal to get your toolbox? Did everybody pretty much do that?
Anybody that was allowed to take them, yeah. I mean, it was, I can't say it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was just like, gee, thanks.
Yeah. As much as
we give you and you give us our empty toolboxes. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it was a bad thing. It was just, it was okay for what it was.
It was a little bittersweet, I think. It's sort of, I mean, given that the plant was closing and there were lots of rumors swirling around about that actually a lot of the promises, as I mentioned before, in terms of long-term health care and some of that, was being quite, I mean, you know, it was bittersweet.
Right. Well, I guess I didn't mean a big deal in terms of, wow, aren't we lucky, but as far as just an emotional level, kind of a turning point.
My take on it, and, you know, it's interesting also from a filmmaking point of view how that scene came about, and I agree with you. To me, it's one scene I always look forward to seeing again. Even though it's only a few shots, really, it just, to me, says so much. And this is another example, along with the people actually filmed in the plant and gave us the footage, where the people who work there, like Popeye, like Kate, like Kathy, many people, Kim Clay, really kind of collaborated with us. They sort of started getting what we were trying to do, you know, meeting us day after day like that. And like somebody suggested, I forget who, that this would be an important day. And we, of course, would have had no idea this was going on. Mm-hmm. And that parking lot where, you know, we pull up in the shot, Steve has been snuck in there by Kathy. You know, he's not allowed to go in that parking lot. You have to be someone who works there to go in that parking lot. And so he was snuck in, and then he did all that shooting because Kathy and others suggested that this would be a way to see what it's like when a plant like this closes, what happens, you know, day by day, week by week. And that's another moment where you see what you referred to before as restrained tears.
Yeah.
Kathy gets through getting her toolbox and jumps, hugs her friend, says bye-bye, jumps back in her car, and then she just suddenly gets caught in her emotion.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that. Some of the sort of big city people who have seen the film have commented in their reviews. Surprised me how much this was commented on is how much people apologize for breaking down and starting to cry. And when you think about reality TV, you know, it's like you see people crying all the time and, you know, that's what you're looking for. But the folks in the plant often apologized and tried to sort of hold it back. You know, they didn't want their emotions to be exploited. They weren't proud of it. They were very modest kind of people, I think.
How did you feel, Popeye, about that aspect of the film?
You mean as
the emotional?
The tears.
Every once in a while, some crusty guy would have tear kind of working its way through the wrinkles down his face, and yet, you know, you would barely notice it, but it would be there.
Well, it's just, for one, I think it put a human aspect to it. You know, it devilified us. I mean, it showed the world that we were just people like everybody else. And that we did care about our jobs, we did care about the people we worked with, and it was quite emotional. I still have a hard time talking about it at times, and it's a natural thing, I think. It was like losing a member of your family.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, Julia, another documentary you've done is A Lion in the House.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's about... the toll taken on families when a child has cancer.
Yes.
And I was wondering about the parallels.
Well,
for you, maybe as a filmmaker.
Yeah. Well, they're really different because Lion, of course, took 10 years to make and 6 years of shooting. And, you know, when you start a story like that, a child is diagnosed with cancer, there's no way of knowing what the ending is going to be. Are they going to live? Are they going to not live? Are they going to be down? You know,
mm-hmm.
It's really with The Last Truck.
6 months and
six months.
Dead, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, actually, we didn't. If you remember, Popeye, when the announcement was made on June 3rd that year.
That's when you started.
We started like that day, right?
Okay. How did you know to do that, Julie, by the way?
Well, it was in the newspaper.
But what occurred
like
to you? Did you just jump up and say, oh, my gosh, we have to do a documentary about this? Or?
Yeah, basically, you know.
Is that what you people
do? It sounds weird, but it's not like we're always looking for documentaries to make, but we live in this community, and, you know, as I've said many times, we're citizens with cameras. So we have cameras, and that's one way we can respond to things. I mean, it was the beginning of summer, honestly. I had just finished my teaching, was kind of ending. So it was a little bit of a break. It wasn't like I had my, because I do teach at Wright State University in the film department. But I think it was just because we thought, this is terrible. This is going to have a huge impact on our community. And our own curiosity was, what is this going to mean? What's this going to look like? And so we just started trying to meet people. We actually found out about a couple of local bars that were within a stone's throw of the plant. We just started going down there and
ordering
beer.
That, by the way, we didn't hang out at all the time. We're not allowed to.
Say that again. That's important.
We didn't hang out at those bars every day. It was just when they started making the movie that they were right around the corner. So that was a big place where people could meet.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we would meet, yeah.
Now,
they could set up their camera equipment, so that was...
It would be like, yeah, we're going to meet at the upper deck, and everybody knew where it was. Or we're going to meet at El Camino, and everybody knew where it was. It isn't like they're all, like, drinking there every day by any means.
Well, and you know, it's a lot of the shots of the factory, and I enjoyed the shots very much, but a lot of them seem to be taken in the winter.
Well, you know, we started in the summer, but
yeah.
As time got closer, And, you know, if you think about it, the film sort of collapses. It's quickly, you see people in T-shirts and so forth just for a little while.
Yeah.
And on their Harleys. But then, you know, the last day is literally almost a third of the film. And the lead-up, okay. That is winter, is what is over half of the film. Because that's when it really started getting grim and sinking in.
And it was bitterly cold.
It was so cold and so miserable, and everyone was just feeling awful. So I think that's why you feel like there's more winter. We also, you know, it took a while to get to know people. It took a while for people to decide to trust us. You know, as Katie once said, the plant was like a closed society. You know, people protected each other. The media did not go in there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could go in without a pass. That pass was your entry to like a whole other world. And people who didn't work there, and somebody says this in the film, have no clue what sort of factory life is like, right? So it took a while, and it took people like Popeye advocating for us, you know, saying, hey, you should meet these people, right? And they're okay. And that's how we gradually started meeting people. And then, of course, we had more to film as we had more people to talk with. You know, you mentioned, though, I'm just going to talk as a filmmaker again here for a sec. Of course, we filmed so much stuff that isn't in the film, so many things, city meetings, county meetings, Lee Fisher, the governor, you name it, Sherrod Brown, you know, things Obama was saying on the campaign trail that had to do with jobs and all this, so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, what was the heart of the story is what those folks went through directly. And we realized that in a way, even their life at home wasn't really that pertinent. What was most pertinent was their life at the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, sometimes we spent more time at the plant than we actually did in our houses.
Sure.
When we were working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know.
At least awake, definitely. No, I that made a lot of sense. And also having it so pretty much completely in the voices of the workers.
Yeah, and that's why in the filming we gradually realized we should, every shot, as much as possible, we should see the plant in the background, or people should be in their cars because they make cars, you know. And actually, if you think back, many, many of the interviews even are either done in a bar that you know is right near the plant because you've seen it, or in their car, or with the plant in the background standing outside. And we also realized that, like, if you're sitting in your car, it's a kind of private space, right? It's like it's yours. Your junk is in there, your stuff. You spend a lot of time in there. Your radio is set to your dial, you know, et cetera. So actually it was kind of a nice, intimate space to interview people in.
It was our cocoon.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. We're going to have to take a break, but first I wanted to take a call from Greg. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. And, Greg, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
How you doing, Popeye?
Pretty good. How are you, Greg?
I'm good, buddy. You know who this is? This is your buddy from down the street there where we grew up.
Out in California?
From LA. Yeah.
I'll be dang. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I saw it on your Facebook that you were going to be on, and I needed to call in and comment and tell you guys how pertinent this movie is to so many things that are happening around the United States. And, you know, big business just doesn't realize what they do to families and to people that help support them and make them a big business when they do these types of things.
They really don't have a clue, but we're just numbers to them. They look at that profit margin before they look at the people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's happened in so many different cities around the United States, you know, you can't even count them. And this movie was so pertinent. When you sent me that copy of it, I sat down and I looked at it, and quite honestly, Paul, I had tears in my eyes within the first 3 or 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I didn't know those people personally, but I knew the type of person in Dayton, Ohio, and what we went through and who we are. You know, I know who we are in the Midwest.
That's right.
And this fellow's calling from California.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
Well, you know, it's a different world out here. It truly is.
Really?
And, you know, you're in a bigger population and, you know, things of that nature. But people out here don't have that sense of worth that you do in the Midwest.
I agree.
You know, and that's what you found in the movie. You know, these people put their heart and their souls into building these trucks. And these trucks are going to be on the road for years and years to come. And they understand that. And that's why they did it. and that's who they are, and that's the kind of people that they are, and that's the kind of things that those people do. And you don't find that in a lot of parts of the country. You certainly don't find it out here in Los Angeles.
Well, thank you, sir.
So,
Greg?
So thank you. Thank you. I look forward to seeing you in July, Paul.
I'll be here waiting on you.
Greg,
right, take care.
Wow. Thanks for your call, Greg. And thanks
thank
for
you.
Listening. You bet.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we got to take that break now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Your business will also be associated with a trusted source for national and local news, arts, and culture. For more information, contact Christine Schottich at 247-4469. And thanks for supporting WOSU 820, NPR News.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program will be here, and we'll hear about the challenges and the joys of being a caregiver. That discussion begins at 11. WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Tomorrow at noon, Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray discusses consumer advocacy and taking on Wall Street. Visit columbusmetroclub.org for tickets and more information.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
Warming up to 75 degrees right now at 10:42 in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, a high of 85. Clear skies tonight, a low of 63 degrees. More sunshine tomorrow and a high of 85. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests are Popeye Hearst, former GM auto worker, and Julia Reichert, filmmaker, producer and director of The Last Truck. It's about GM closing its truck plant in Moraine, Ohio, and putting about 2,500 people out of work a couple days before Christmas in 2008. We're nominated for the Academy Award this year, the film will be shown at the Wexner Center tomorrow night. Go to WOSU.org/allsides for a link to that information, or you could just go straight to the Wexner Center. Let's hear another cut now. This one kind of goes to the emotion. It also, it talks about family and the connection that you have with each other.
We were like therapy to each other. You know, it's just like going to a bar, and your bartender has to listen to all your problems, you know, your wife, your kids, fighting and fussing. That's how it was. And the sad thing about it is, it really didn't sink in until I gave her my badge. I gotta go.
That was Lewis. He worked in the body shop, and that was on the last day that the factory was open. Popeye, how does it, you know, when you listen to those, I mean, it chokes me up. I've listened to it four times now, and it still kind of chokes me up. I mean, it'd be tough to leave your family, and I'm wondering what's happened to all those relationships.
Well, I still keep in contact with a few of them, but not like I would like to. You know, a lot of people have moved. A lot of people want to get over it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not like they used to be. You know, when you see somebody every day, it's just like if you move to a new neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, your old neighbors, I'll come back and see you. Well, you know, as time goes by, you go back less and less. You see less and less. So there's a few of them I still keep in contact with, but not like it used to be.
You know, what I noticed, I think people keep in touch with their really best friends, like a handful. But some people have gone to community college. Right here in Dayton, we have Sinclair Community College. There's others, too. But some people refer to that as like the new GM because there are so many people who decided to try to get retrained, even though they might be in their 40s or even 50s,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to community college. So I think that has helped some people kind of maintain their relationships. But, you know, a lot of people feel really isolated. I mean, now and then I talk to people on the phone, and they don't sound as happy as they used to sound, a lot of people. They seem isolated and alone, and some people still haven't found work. A lot of people still haven't found work. You know, there were, I believe, 4 suicides of young men, young family men, you know, following over the months, you know, following the plant closing. This had a really big impact on our community. You know, it rippled out. I mean, the economic impact certainly rippled out in terms of closing of other businesses, related businesses, you know, restaurants struggling, bars struggling, and so forth, dry cleaners, you know, you name it. But also emotionally, I think it's created a lot of, you know, sense of loss and sadness. And I would even go so far to say, I was going to go back to what Greg said in his statement about the work ethic and the pride in the work. Mm-hmm. And he brings up the point of who built America anyway, you know, the pride of, it's not just big business. I mean, who built all the wealth, you know, who built the washing machines and the fridges and the building materials and the homes? It's the blue collar middle class built all that. And we're not manufacturing much anymore. So it's really a big shift in a sense, I would say not only a shift, but a loss in terms of America that we need to be cognizant of, that we've, a whole bit of our population has lost their sense of purpose in a way.
Well, you know, just like last Friday, Polaris is a big manufacturer of toys, ATVs and snowmobiles and ski-doos and stuff like that. They had a plant in Wisconsin. Well, they're closing it down and shipping it to Mexico. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's and it's all because of that profit margin. They can pay them people down there nothing, you know. But mm-hmm. the quality is going to suffer, but their profit margin is going to go up. So the stockholders, you know, they're going to make money. And people forget about Americans. You know, they'll worry about everything else that's going on in every other country in the world. And we've got a big, major problem going on in America right now. You know,
yeah.
Pretty soon it's going to be, you're either going to have it or you're not going to have it.
It's already feels like it's going that way. I mean, they want us to be, you know, loyal Americans. You know, go overseas if we have to fight a war, pay our taxes. But it seems like a lot of the owners of businesses really aren't loyal to America. They're loyal to their, you know, their stockholders, but also to their profit bottom line.
And this is just my opinion, but I also think that's why Julie and Steve didn't win the Oscar, because if they would have won the Oscar, it would have brought to the forefront that there is a problem in America and that people just don't want to admit it.
I never heard you say that, but I don't know. Could be right.
I am, you know, besides the impression I gained from about the job itself and how hard it can be, I got a whole different impression of the plant. I mean, for me, from the outside, and you're right, media is never allowed inside these plants. And I, as somebody in the business for 27 years and first in newspapers, I'll tell you, you know, there was plenty of times I wanted to get into a plant and just to see what they looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a closed off society. You don't really know what it is. And I was so impressed with the plant. And I wanted to get a cut from the movie, the film now. It's about a wonderful description of the plant. I think it's Kate. She's a forklift operator, and she says the plant, with all the equipment, sounds, and smells, was like a living thing.
I just had this vision of this big, gentle dragon that was laying down, taking its last breath. The different parts of the body were shutting down. The steam pipes and the air hoses, sparks coming out of the robots with the heat, and you just imagine everything just whoosh.
That was Kate, the forklift operator, and someone else described it as glamorous, that it was a glamorous place to work. It was so big and wow-ish. What a difference that movie made for me in terms of my impressions of it.
It was glamorous. I mean, we heard that from a lot of people, especially as they entered as a young person. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, Popeye, but
I was 37 when I hired
you. You were a little older.
That's a spring chicken still.
But you worked at other. I think people who would, like, let's say they had a summer, they worked at another place. Katie was 24. She'd probably worked at a couple other plants that were much sort of, as she would describe it, like dirtier and not as modern. But you go in that plant, that's a very impressive, well-oiled machine that's clean and beautiful and don't you think? I mean, I don't know if you had that impression when you first went there.
Oh, yeah, because everything was brand new. You know, just like, well, the Dayton Daily News did get a guy in there to work on the line for 8 hours one day. And he called everybody industrial athletes. He said he had no idea how these people did this for all them years. He said because he could hardly get to his car. And he had people helping him.
Right. He lasted not even one day, I don't think.
Well, he was just in there for one day. But still, he was the only person of the media at that time that actually was on our side. Everybody else was against us. But...
And that's because he spent a day in there.
Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish everybody could at least spend 8 hours in there. You know, it's fun to walk through and watch these people do their jobs. And they're like, well, hell, I could do that. That looks really easy. Well, the reason that looks easy is because that guy did that 600
right.
times a day.
Right. It's like so many things. It's like anything else. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join the conversation with Julia Reichert, the filmmaker, producer, and director of The Last Truck. The movie will be shown tomorrow night at the Wexner Center. And also, Popeye Hearst, he's a former GM automaker and one of the subjects of the documentary, which was nominated for an Academy Award this year. We have a couple emails now. One's from Robert. He writes, when the unions lost the strikes in the immediate post-war years, companies forced unions to reduce the scope of collective bargaining to just wages, benefits, and working conditions. Unions were forced to give up bargaining over product, design, production, quality, I assume. That meant workers no longer needed to understand either the technology they used. Any ideas for changing working class interest in science and technology?
Well,
literally, 2 years before they closed the plant, it might have been a little longer, 2.5, we literally gave up all kinds of stuff in hopes of getting a new product.
Right.
And with the wording in the agreement, of course, was ambiguous, so it was always worded towards General Motors' favor, but we give up all kinds of stuff to get a new product, and we ended up closing the plant. So,
that was actually a bitter pill. I mean, people showed me the paperwork, a couple different people did, where they had, the union had given up, and I'm forgetting now exactly what, but I think it had to do with retirement, health care, not retirement, because they wanted to take care of the retirees, but they gave up on health care and on wages. Because the deal was, we'll do this. We'll hold the line on wages, et cetera. But you promise us that if there's a new product, we'll get it.
We passed up wage increases for two contracts.
Right.
In the hopes that they would come through for you.
Yes.
And also to protect the retirees. They did not want the retirees.
Yes.
See, that's the thing people don't realize. And then
it's like 6-1. 6 retirees for every worker.
Yeah, and they wanted to protect their benefit, the retirees' benefits. But so that was one of the reasons this particular plant closing was so bitter, is because people had really sacrificed a lot and won awards for quality and worked overtime to get a new product so they could keep having a job. And then the plant was closed, boom, without any forewarning, this plant's going to close. But the guy is asking Popeye about, he's kind of making the case, and I don't know if you would agree, that the average worker, let's say like you, you know, really doesn't understand the production process, the science behind it, and how can we get them to understand it? Would you agree with that, though?
That I don't understand the production process?
Well, that the average worker is disconnected from the science of automobile production.
Trust me, they understood every
minute.
Yeah.
I got that sense from the movie, too. I would agree
they
that...
knew exactly what was going on.
And as you said earlier, there were a lot more skilled workers than I would have known about.
About 10% of the workers are skilled trades.
There was about 600 of us. But we were like firemen or insurance policies. You know what I mean? If it was running, we really...
You don't appreciate it.
you don't do anything. But when that big ball quit rolling, it was like $20,000 a minute. Then we had to get in there and get that stuff running and get it back up. Of course, the production people, you know, they were like, well, take your time, because they work so hard. But, you know, if you don't use your insurance, if you never wreck your car, you never use your insurance. But when you do wreck your car, you want good insurance. And that's what the skilled trades people were all about at the GM plant.
He's right in that after World War II, there was a lot was given up. And I think that's an interesting point. I don't know that it applies to an auto worker, though, actually.
I was interested in the point that was made that when they were ordering the hinges for the last 300 cars or whatever is 350 cars, whoever in upper management ordered the hinges, I guess for doors, didn't order enough because they only ordered 350 hinges and you need 2 hinges per car. And I thought, well, this is just so elementary.
Yeah.
Even I would get that. How could they screw something?
You got to remember, they knew the last day a year, 6 months before they told us, or a year before they closed the plant.
And why is that something that management has to order? I mean, I didn't really get the separation of duties.
It was Detroit, right?
Yeah, it was Detroit that did that. Well,
okay.
Because the union never made one business decision. It's the company that orders all the parts. It's the company that makes sure that we've got everything we need. We just provided the labor to put it together.
Okay.
You know, it's not the workers or the union's job to make sure that we've got everything we need. It's the company's job.
You know, we have to close it off here in just a few minutes, and I had a couple questions, including a email from Marcy I want to get to. She wanted to know about how you decide on or choose your focus for a film and do the projects find you, Julia, and we kind of talked about that already, but she also wanted to know if you did a film a while back called Growing Up Female.
Yes, that's
okay.
Funny. That was actually the very first film I worked on, or, you know, co-directed Growing Up Female. That was back in 1970, 71. It was my college final project.
Okay.
And I think what you look for, and you referred to Lion in the House before, you know, partly it's what I feel connected to, what I feel like I have a reason to tell that story. In the case of the GM plant, I live in this community.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Lion in the House, which is about kids fighting cancer, my child had cancer. So, you know, I felt like when I walked into those rooms, I wasn't some crew just coming in to ask a bunch of nosy questions. I was another mom who had been where they were. And I knew the importance of the story. Anything that's sort of where you see life is going to change is going to be a good story. And that was clearly going to be true for the GM workers, just like it was clearly going to be true for any family who had a diagnosis of cancer in a child. That makes a good story, life-changing events.
That's all the time we have for this show today. Julia Reichert, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. This was fun.
And Paul Popeye Hurst, former GM worker, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You can hear more about the movie, the film, The Last Truck, on WOSU.org/allsides. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, John Powers is just back from the Cannes Film Festival. We'll talk with him about the winners and why this year's festival felt less like an extension of Hollywood than in years past. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Palmer Miller Nelson Insurance Agency Incorporated, serving Central Ohio homeowners and businesses for 155 years. 261-6300 or online at pmnins.com.
Sunday night at 8 on WOSU-TV, we present the program, the national broadcast of the National Memorial Day Concert live from the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol. The events honor the service and sacrifice of men and women in uniform, their families at home, and all of those who have given their lives for our country. The evening includes an all-star lineup of dignitaries, actors, and musical artists. Join the celebration Sunday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. Currently 76 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, a high of 85. It's 11 o'clock.
Gail Sheehy has written prolifically about the life stages of the baby boomer generation. In her latest installment of this journey, she explores the conflict all too many face these days, that of independent adult and caregiver to a loved one. In the telling, Gail shares her own story of caring for her chronically ill and then dying husband,
the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that she faced and how she overcame them and survived. She lays it all down in both story and checklist form in her new book, Passages in Caregiving, Turning Chaos into Confidence. She'll be here to talk about it in a few minutes on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.